The committee will come to order. Members, please take your seats if you haven't already done so. We have a quorum present. So we'll have a motion to approve the minutes for February 7th. The Representative Considine, have you had time to?
I have, and they're tremendous.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
Did you also read February 1st?
No, I missed those. Oh, yeah. I'll move both of them.
Okay. Thank you. The minutes for February 1st have been moved. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We've passed the minutes. It's a good start. Today, what we are going to do is to review House File 892. This is Governor Dayton's 2017 bonding bill. Now, you all have spreadsheets, and we'll be walking through those spreadsheets. You don't all have copies of the bill. We're asking that with the length of the bill, you share. So I think we have enough for to do this in pairs. And it's also online if you want to peruse it in more depth later on. So, yes, did he just call me a tree hugger?
I didn't, Mr. Chair.
Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a person that works in the paper mill, I'd certainly like to see as many copies of these things made as possible.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. We'll definitely keep that under consideration, but we're trying to protect the trees and the environment here. We have with us today Commissioner Franz, and I guess the show is yours, sir. You can welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and begin your presentation.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Myron Franz, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. Thank you for the opportunity today to present the Governor's Bonding Bill proposal. I just have a few opening comments to make, and we'll go through the groupings that we believe are important for the Governor's Bonding Bill, and then my colleague, Liz Connor, will walk through the spreadsheet itself. But let me just start by saying, Mr. Chair, that the governor appreciates this hearing. He appreciates your willingness to listen. As you may recall, he introduced or submitted his bonding bill proposal on January 4th of this year, almost a month ago. The governor released his budget proposal, a bonding proposal, on the second day of this legislative session because of the urgency that we believe we need in this bonding bill. Partly the urgency is because we didn't pass the bonding bill in 2016, and partly the urgency is that these projects can be instituted this summer if we pass a bonding bill earlier rather than later. So the governor urges this committee and the legislature in general to move quickly on the bonding bill. We believe that these projects are needed for our infrastructure and to invest in economic development across the state. Now, overall, the governor is recommending a $1.5 billion investment of general obligation bonds. Now, if you go to the last page of your spreadsheet, page 7 of 7, you'll see the final numbers. Let me just walk through the final numbers, then I'll go back and explain the overall perspective here. Bless you. You can see on the top of the chart there, state agency and local total. General obligation bond total is $1.518 billion. We are canceling about $18 million in general obligation bonds, and so the net general obligation increase is $1.5 billion in bonding. Of that, about a little over 75 million is in geo bond user financing instruments, about 16.788 billion in general fund cash in this particular bill. We have an appropriation bond total of 122 million and trunk highway bonds of over 40 million. State airports fund we use of 9.2 million. And rail service improvement from the special revenue fund of $1 million. So what we would like to do now is just kind of go through some of the overall perspective and then get into the details. The governor believes that these investments that he's proposed in his bonding bill are well distributed around the state. About a third or less than one third are in the metro area. Over a third are located throughout greater Minnesota, and another third are in statewide programs like the University of Minnesota, Minnesota State Colleges and University, and also roads and highways. I'd like to talk briefly about the use of GO bonds and our capacity for bonding. We have several measures at M&B, and this committee heard those measures, the debt guidelines, several weeks ago, I believe, in terms of the capacity for bonding. We believe that the governor believes that we can afford a $1.5 billion bonding bill. In fact, we could afford over a $3 billion bonding bill this year and still be within the debt guidelines. We're not suggesting that. We're simply saying that the debt capacity is such at Minnesota that we could bond that much and still be within the debt guidelines. In 2016 and 2017, the general fund cost of our debt represented about 3.3% of our general fund revenues. With the governor's budget proposal, which assumes a $1.5 billion general obligation bonding, the cost of our debt would only be about 3.2% of general fund revenues. And that shows you that our revenues are growing to the extent that even doing a $1.5 billion bonding bill this session would not increase the percentage of general fund revenues. Also what matters, as many of you know, are the ratings that we receive from the rating agencies. And Fitch just upgraded Minnesota to AAA last July, and Fitch commented on their upgrade by saying that Minnesota's combined debt and unfunded pension liability is low relative to other states. The rating agencies tend to look at all debt, including unfunded pension liability and debt through bonds. So Fitch also stated that Minnesota has a well-established debt policy program that controls issuance and require rapid amortization of GO debt. Now Standard & Poor's also gave Minnesota a positive, outlook in 2015, and they said they might well raise our rating in the next year or so. S&P commented that Minnesota adheres to well-established debt management guidelines, that we amortize our debt at a rapid rate, and we have debt affordability metrics that keep our debt levels moderate compared to other states. These rating agencies are the experts, and they understand the complexities of bonding, and they overview our information in great detail. Their positive review of our bonding activities is meaningful in terms of how we approach our bonding activities. Now, let me just walk through several categories of bonding projects that the governor has. The first one is really, we call it sustaining the infrastructure or taking care of those things that we already have. About 19% or $328 million of the governor's recommendations will preserve and maintain infrastructure and facilities around the state where we have a responsibility to take care of what we already have. Let me give you an example. The governor recommends a $34 million project for the design and construction costs, a historic Fort Snelling, to close the deteriorating visitor center and to renovate the Calvary Barracks building as the new visitor center in time for the Fort Bicentennial in 2020. The entire project is estimated to cost $46 million, with $12 million of the total project cost coming from private donations raised by the Minnesota Historical Society. Another important area is education. 20% or $346 million of the governor's investment recommendations are in our E-12 and our higher education systems to help move the state forward. Under the governor's recommendations, the University of Minnesota would receive $154 million and Minnesota State Colleges and Universities would see about $161 million. One example of the higher education area, the governor is committed to restoring the state's preeminence in its medical education. And he's proposing that the University of Minnesota's health sciences education facility is critical to achieving that goal. And part of the recommendation for the University of Minnesota is $67 million to renovate and modernize the university's aging medical and health sciences education facilities by building a new state-of-the-art labs and classrooms. This will also expand the university's capacity to conduct healthcare research and strengthen our educational programs to retain and attract the best students and faculty in the nation. Another area in the higher education proposal is where the governor is committed to college campuses across the state. He's proposed an additional $135 million. That's $80 million for the Minnesota State System and $55 million for the University of Minnesota for the asset preservation funds that both of those institutions maintain. On behalf of the students, we must maintain and repair our buildings around the state. This includes mechanical work, plumbing work, roof, window, and building exterior repairs, and life safety and code compliance to reduce overall operating costs and maintenance. As we all know, to the extent you delay maintenance, you're going to end up paying for it in the long term, and many times it's going to be more expensive over a long course. Another area is the water and natural resources area. 19% or $330 million of the governor's recommendations are in the water and natural resources area to address our water infrastructure and our recreation needs of our local communities. Let me give you one example there. The governor recommends $80 million for supplemental assistance grants to municipalities for high-cost clean water and drinking water infrastructure projects. These are located across the state, and they address existing environmental or public health concerns. The wastewater infrastructure fund is used to supplement either low-interest loans from the Clean Water Revolving Fund or to match a grant and loan funding from the U.S. Department of Agriculture in the Agriculture Rural Development Program. Another area is in the health, housing, and public safety area. The governor recommends 21% or $362 million to keep our residents safe. These recommendations will upgrade public health lab equipment, make improvements to our state hospitals, and treatment programs that will enhance both patient safety and treatment. For example, to protect public employee safety, the governor would invest $19 million to complete a new intake and loading dock at the St. Cloud Correctional Facility. This proposal includes a $4.4 million repair on the aging perimeter of that wall that poses a security concern and make other essential improvements at the prison. As some of you know, there's a problem there. We need to actually keep people out of that particular correctional system because they climb the wall and come into the correctional system. We have another area called in transportation, about 13%, or $219 million, to help keep our economy moving and our people moving around the state. The governor's recommendations in this area cover the local transportation and bridge projects. So, for example, the governor would fund local transportation projects with GO bonds. This is a $70 million grant program for local governments for the reconstruction, rehabilitation, and removal of bridges on their local roads, and also does provide opportunities for roads in local areas. Most of these projects, or all these projects, do not qualify for highway transit funds. The governor has historically included the local road improvements and bridge replacements in the GO bonding project, and we believe this is another tool for local communities to aid in their infrastructure needs. The last two more areas I want to mention. Rail safety is another priority of the governor. The governor is recommending a $91 million investment in rail safety improvement around the state. As rail transportation increases across the state, it's important that we improve the safety of our crossings and the ability of our first responders to manage an emergency. You may know that an average of 85 trains pass through the city of Moorhead each day, many of them carrying crude oil from North Dakota. However, the current layout of the streets and track means that it's impossible to install railroad gates at the current intersections. The governor recommends $42.3 million to separate motor vehicle and rail traffic in that city, and we believe it will improve public safety and alleviate the traffic delays caused by the passing trains. The governor included the rail projects in the bonding bill rather than in this transportation funding package because we believe that these projects are fundamentally analogous to local projects, and they may be more effective for local communities to manage these projects than through the MnDOT system. Another area the governor is investing in is agriculture. He's investing $38 million to extend the ability of the Rural Finance Authority to make loans for farmers and to renovate state labs, purchase new lab equipment to support our food and industry. And I know that this committee and this legislature is moving on that aspects of that already. And finally, the Veterans and Military Affairs area. The governor is recommending $23 million to address life and safety hazards for the Minnehaha Parkway Bridge on the campus of Minneapolis Vets Home. He also wants to make some upgrades to the National Readiness Centers in Brainerd and St. Cloud. At the Minneapolis Vets Home, many of you may realize when you drive by on Minnehaha Parkway that bridge has been closed for a number of years, and whenever there's an ambulance called for the vets home there, they have to go all the way around the park to get the facility, and we believe that bridge needs to be adjusted or fixed in order to alleviate that delay. Finally, I'd like to mention what the governor's changed. As many of you recognize, this bonding bill is very similar to the 2016 bonding bill that the governor proposed. but there are some differences. For example, the St. Louis River, because no bonding bill was passed last year, we've increased the ask here to 47, excuse me, we've included the ask here of a state match in order to secure a $47.2 million in federal funds. So we had asked for $12.7 million in 2016, and we were asking now for $25.4 million in 2017, but that will, we will see a match of $47.2 million in federal funds. And we believe we're at risk of losing those federal funds if we don't engage this project this year. In the transportation area, as I mentioned, the governor continues to support a long-term comprehensive transportation package, but we do have recommendations in this bonding bill for local road improvement grants of $70 million, local bridge replacement grants of $70 million, the 35 Lake Street Access Project of $25 million, and the 694 Rice Street Exchange at $20.5 million. We also included some legislative priorities that we saw in the session last year. The governor incorporated a number of those projects, and they were included in his bill. This is the Agricultural Utilization Research Lab and the lab equipment, the Child and Adolescent Behavioral Sciences Facility of $7.5 million. We've also made some cost changes. Last fall, we reached out to agencies and local governments to get updates on projects and adjusted cost basis on new information. And for example, the Minnesota State completed redesign and design for a number of its projects and made adjustments to better account for the anticipated cost of construction. So we had a $3 million increase in the projects for the Minnesota State system. In the pollution control area, we saw a $650,000 decrease thanks to design funding for the project in the 2016 supplemental budget bill. The new projects that we included are listed below on the schedule, but we have those listed as Melrose, where we have some public infrastructure following a fire in September of 2016, and a new electric substation of about $3.9 million. We've also added some money for the Second Harvest Heartland. We're trying to build a new distribution facility for about $18 million. Those are the general buckets of changes the governor's made for his bonding bill proposal. And I'd like, unless there's any questions, we can have Liz Connor run through the spreadsheet.
Before we do the spreadsheet, does anyone have any questions of Commissioner France? Representative Berglund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner France, in the governor's transportation budget, and perhaps we don't have quite that detail, but the Corridors of Commerce program, is there going to be more money devoted to that under the governor's program?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that will be addressed in the governor's transportation bill, the Corridors of Commerce. But it's my understanding there will be increases in that program.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Pastine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're sitting at historical lows for interest rates. Can you ballpark what a 0.5% increase from the Fed would do to these projects?
Mr. Fence.
Mr. Chair, Representative, let me try to give you an example this way. So in August of 2016, we refinanced some bonds, and we sold about $800 million in total bonds and refinancing. And at that time, we got interest rates below 3%, closer to 2%, actually. Some of the historic lows we've ever been able to achieve. We believe we saved over $30 to $40 million in that offering a loan by refinancing some of the bonds that we had in order to get that lower rate. Now, the rate has come up. So based on the current rates about a month ago, it would have cost us about $50 to $60 million more to do the same size bonding bill today than it did in August of 2016. So the rate, I don't know exactly how much the rate's come up, but it has come up, and we expect it will continue to come up. But I can get you a better estimate on what a 0.5% would mean on if the Fed raised the rate.
Thank you. Any other questions? Then Ms. Connor.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Liz Connor. I'm the Capital Budget Coordinator at Minnesota Management and Budget. I'll take just a minute to orient you to the spreadsheet. You may have a couple in front of you. I'll be working off of the MMB spreadsheet that lists projects by agency, and the agencies are listed in alphabetical order. There are page and line number references in case you'd like to crosswalk with the bill to see where the language discusses these projects. Starting with the Department of Administration, the governor has $38.2 million recommendations in this area. First, the Centennial Parking Ramp has money dedicated for structural repairs, $10.878 million. There is $3.5 million recommended for land acquisition, site preparation, and paving related to visitor and staff parking facilities. $5 million is recommended to replenish the capital asset preservation and replacement account. $350,000 is the governor's recommendation for repairs to the monuments and memorials around the Capitol complex. And $18.5 million is the governor's recommendation to fund security upgrades in and around the Capitol complex. And that incorporates recommendations from the advisory committee. In the agriculture area, starting on line 8, as Commissioner Franz discussed, there is the $35 million recommendation for authorization for Rural Finance Authority loans. $2.218 million is recommended for lab equipment for the Department of Agriculture, which would support equipment related to food safety and plant disease sample testing. And that recommendation comes from the general fund, as does the next one on line 10. Agricultural Utilization Research Institute has $690,000 recommended for expansion, renovations, and lab equipment in the Marshall and Waseca facilities. The Amateur Sports Commission recommendation begins on line 14. There is just over $5 million recommended for the National Sports Center in Blaine, which would expand playing fields and construct maintenance facilities and make other improvements. And $500,000 is recommended for asset preservation at the National Sports Center for a total of just under $5.6 million. Department of Corrections begins on line 17. There is $20 million recommended by the governor for asset preservation. There are two projects that the governor has recommended related to the St. Cloud Prison on line 18 and line 20. Commissioner Franz discussed both of these, the intake and loading dock. A recommendation is $19 million, and the repairs to the perimeter wall around the facility is $4.4 million, down on line 20. Line 19, jumping back up a bit, there's a recommendation for the Lino Lakes facility, the Building E renovation, which would renovate an empty building and increase prison bed space, and that recommendation is $5 million. On line 21, there is $1.9 million recommended for renovations to the control room at the Moose Lake facility. Two recommendations related to facilities with challenge incarceration programs, $2 million for the Togo facility and $1.5 million for Willow River, and that would increase program capacity for the CIP program. And finally, a recommendation of $2.853 million for the Northeast Regional Corrections Center to enhance the programming space for education and vocational programs. And the total for the Department of Corrections is $56.653 million. Recommendations for the Department of Education start on line 26. There is just over $14 million recommended for facility projects at Red Lake Elementary and Red Lake Early Childhood Center. $2 million is recommended for library construction grants, which would address ADA compliance issues. And $1.5 million is recommended for the Dyslexia Institute of Minnesota, which would allow them to acquire land and build a new facility. This is a new recommendation from Governor's 2016 recommendations. And the total for the Department of Education is $17.57 million. On the next page, the Department of Economic Employment and Development, line 30, there is $1.342 million recommended for asset preservation for the South Minneapolis Workforce Center, a recommendation of $10 million for the Transportation Economic Development Program, which is a collaboration between DEED and NNDOT. The governor recommends $21 million for the Business Development Public Infrastructure Program, which supports businesses in greater Minnesota. $5 million is the governor's recommendation for the Innovative Business Development Public Infrastructure Grant Program to support things like sewers, streets, utilities, and telecommunications. Then lines 34 and 35 are new recommendations in 2017. These are related to the Eagles Healing Nest facility in Stock Center. The first line 34, cancels a general fund appropriation that was made to the city of Sauk Center for the Eagles Healing Nest. Then on line 35, the appropriation is made to deed for a grant directly to Eagles Healing Nest so that they can make roof repairs of that facility. On line 36, there is $4.5 million recommended for the city of Bemidji for the regional dental facility. We've understood that they have now withdrawn that project for consideration, but this is still listed here since it conforms with the recommendations released in January. $25.932 million is recommended for a grant to Hennepin County for a new regional medical examiner's facility. $3 million is the governor's recommendation for the North Country Food Bank in Polk County. $21 million is recommended in appropriation bonds for the Duluth Superior Street Steam Plant. This recommendation is not entirely new. It was included in the 2016 governor's recommendations, but it was funded at that time with general obligation bonds. We've come to learn that because the facility is operated by a private entity, that a different funding source is needed, so it was switched to appropriation bonds from general obligation bonds. Line 40, there's a $3 million recommendation, which is new from 2016, for Phase 2 power generation improvements for the city of Litchfield.
That's a good one.
Line 41, another new recommendation, and line 42 as well is new for the city of Melrose, related to two different projects, an electric substation and loop, $2.95 million. And general public infrastructure improvements has a recommendation of $900,000, and that is related to the fire that the city experienced in September of 2016. On line 43, the city of Medelia is recommended to receive a grant for $98,000. This is another new recommendation, and this is intended to address the public infrastructure damage as a result of the fire in February of 2016. The Science Museum of Minnesota, the governor continues a $13 million recommendation for that project. Line 45 is a new recommendation, as the commissioner mentioned, $18 million for a grant to Anoka County for a new distribution facility for Second Harvest Heartland. Line 46, $4.48 million for the city of Red Wings Town Renaissance, and this is a slight increase over the 2016 recommendation. $1 million is intended for the city of St. Paul to do design to replace the River Center parking ramp. And finally, a new recommendation for the city of St. James related to projects related to the Highway 4 construction work that MnDOT is undertaking in the city. In total, these total recommendations are $138.645 million. Department of Health recommendations start on line 53. $2.335 million is recommended for new public health lab equipment that has reached the end of its useful life. And that is a general fund recommendation. Historical Society, the commissioner discussed the Fort Snelling Visitor Center, $34 million recommendation. And the governor also recommends $2.5 million for the Historical Society's asset preservation at site throughout the state for a total of $36.5 million for the agency. There are three recommendations related to the Housing Finance Agency. The first is $70 million in appropriation bonds for housing infrastructure bonds that would be allocated statewide. It's on line 58. $20 million in general obligation bonding for public housing rehabilitation grants. And a new recommendation on line 60 related to the 2014 and 2015 authorizations of housing infrastructure bonds. The Housing Finance Agency indicated that although they are nearing the end of their authorization from those years, they received favorable interest or debt service rates that would allow them to issue an additional $20 million of housing infrastructure bonds without any additional cost to debt service. So in total, Housing Finance Agency has $110 million recommended. Recommendations for Department of Human Services begin on line 64. $70.255 million is recommended for renovation and construction related to phase two improvements at the Security Hospital. $2.25 million is recommended for safety and security renovations at the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center. $14.5 million is recommended for phase two projects at the Minnesota Sex Offender Program in St. Peter. On line 67, there is $12.42 million recommended for the Sex Offender Program, Less Restrictive Alternatives Program, and $15 million on line 68 is recommended for early childhood facilities, grants to do renovation and construction for early childhood facilities, and that program would require a 50% local match. There is $1.5 million recommended by the governor for system-wide asset preservation. $2 million is recommended from the general fund for Perspectives Family Center for expansion and renovation of their St. Louis Park facility. A new recommendation on line 71 is $7.53 million for the Child and Adolescent Behavioral Health Services facility in Wilmer. $12 million is recommended for the Dorothy Day Connection and Opportunity Center. $8 million, which is a new recommendation from 2016, to the city of Hermantown for the Arrowhead Regional Health and Wellness Center. A new recommendation on line 74 is for the Family Partnership to do pre-design and design of a new facility. That is a general fund recommendation. Another general fund project is on line 75, the Minneapolis American Indian Center. Pre-design for renovation of that facility is $155,000. Another new recommendation on line 76 is $2.75 million from the general fund for the Minneapolis People Center for facility renovation and construction. This is a facility that provides health and wellness services. And in total, the recommendations under DHS total just under $150 million. Recommendations for the Met Council start on line 80. $10 million for Metropolitan Regional Parks would provide grants for improvements and expansions to parks and trail systems. $5 million is recommended for the inflow infiltration program to improve metropolitan area wastewater collection systems. An increased recommendation from the governor's 2016 capital budget is the Como Zoo project for the city of St. Paul. That is a $15.455 million recommendation. A new recommendation, there are two additional new recommendations under the Met Council for St. Paul as well. There is the Wapentake Center at the Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary to build an interpretive center. That is a $3 million recommendation. And then another $3 million is recommended for the Great River Passage River Recreation and Environmental Education Center. Finally, under the Met Council on line 85, for a grant to Washington County, $3 million to do environmental analysis related to the Gateway Corridor Transitway, which would eventually support Goldmine Bus Rapid Transit. And in total for the Met Council, about $39.5 million is the governor's recommendation. Department of Military Affairs begins on line 87. There is an increase to this recommendation compared to 2016. The governor's recommendation is $4.5 million for St. Cloud facility construction improvements. There is a new recommendation for the Brainerd Readiness Center facility of $3.5 million. And $2.5 million is recommended for asset preservation for military affairs facilities statewide. In total, the governor's recommendation for the department is $10.5 million. Under Minnesota Management and Budget, the two recommendations are related to bond sale expenses. The general obligation bond sale expense is $1.522 million. This is a slight increase over the 2016 levels due to the change in the size of the bonding bill. And the $40,000 bond sale expense related to trunk highway bonds is the same amount as 2016. The recommendations for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities are on the next page, on line 96. Higher education, asset preservation, and replacement, the governor recommends $80 million. South Central College in North Mankato, the governor recommends $6.4 million for labs and classroom design and renovation to support the programs related to STEM and healthcare. That is an increase compared to his 2016 budget, as the commissioner has discussed earlier. Line 98, $652,000 is recommended for design and renovation at the Fergus Falls campus to create a new center for student and workforce success. On line 99, $547,000 is recommended for the Wadena campus to design and renovate the library and student development services. Line 100, $551,000 is recommended for Northland Community and Technical College for lab design and renovations. The Bemidji State University project on line 101 is an increase over the governor's 2016 recommendation. This recommendation relates to design and renovation of the Academic Learning Center. Rochester Community and Technical College would see a $14.475 million recommendation, which is an increase over 2016, and that would go to support design, renovation, and construction of memorial and plaza halls on that campus. Hibbing Community College would also see an increase over the 2016 governor's recommendation. There is a $7.482 million recommendation to streamline the campus and create a new front door for the academic buildings. The governor recommends $16.871 million for Winona State University for their Phase 2 project related to the Education Village. St. Cloud State University Student and Academic Health Center would have a recommendation in the governor's budget of $12.381 million. $4.35 million is the governor's recommendation for Minnesota State Mankato, their clinical science building, phase two of their design and renovation project. And Riverland Community College in Albert Lea would see a new recommendation in the governor's 2017 budget of just under $5 million. For their transportation, trade, and industrial education centers to co-locate similar educational offerings. In total, the total authorization for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities is on line 109. It is just short of $202 million. Of that amount, the state general obligation bond share would be $161.2 million, and Minnesota State's user financing would be paid on $40.629 million. Recommendations for the Minnesota Zoo are on line 112 and 113. The governor has two recommendations. The first is for the Heart of the Zoo. This is an increase over his 2016 recommendation. There is a $20.68 million recommendation for the zoo to revitalize exhibits and add new space, and $4 million for asset preservation for the zoo, for a total of $24.68 million. There's a recommendation for minute services on line 115, $1.432 million is recommended by the governor for minute to be able to repurpose areas that were utilized, the state office data centers, back to usable office space. Department of Natural Resources on line 117, there is a slight increase in the natural resources asset preservation recommendation for the department. That number is now $34 million. The governor recommends $2 million for building and facilities development statewide for DNR. There is an increase in the governor's recommendation for flood hazard mitigation grants. The recommendation is now $6.5 million, and that would cover 50% of costs that were not reimbursed by the federal government. $3.5 million is the governor's recommendation to develop and construct a new fisheries management station on Lake Mille Lacs. The governor recommends $7 million for dam safety, repair, reconstruction, and removal. He recommends $2 million for state land reforestation and stand improvement. That would include planting and seeding new trees. On line 123, the governor recommends $2 million for Native Prairie Bank acquisition and development to acquire conservation easements. There's a $3 million recommendation for Itasca State Park land renovations that would relate to land and building improvements. Line 125, there is a $9.5 million recommendation by the governor to acquire and develop new wildlife management areas and aquatic management areas. The governor recommends $1 million for state park campground renovations to address safety and ADA compliance issues. On line 127, the governor's recommendation of $2 million would support new and existing state park recreation area, recreation areas and trails. $1 million would support fish hatchery enhancements throughout the state. Another recommendation of $1 million would support conservation and public access through scientific and natural resources, natural area acquisition. On line 130, the governor recommends $2 million to match private donations for the Reinvest in Minnesota Critical Habitat Match Program. And then there are a few local recommendations in this area. The first is $1.5 million, which is a new recommendation from 2016 for a grant to the city of St. Paul to replenish shade trees that were lost to emerald ash borer in the city. The governor recommends $763,000 for a grant to the city of Two Harbors to design a small cracked harbor facility. And a new recommendation of $1 million would construct the Prospector's ATV trail system in Lake County. The total recommendation for DNR is $79.763 million. The recommendation for Purpose Center for Arts Education is on line 135. That is $2.3 million for asset preservation. The recommendations for Pollution Control Agency have all changed in some way from the governor's 2016 recommendation. As Commissioner Franz mentioned, the recommendation for St. Louis River Area of Concern is now $25.4 million in order to secure the $47.2 million in federal funds. The closed landfill construction recommendation is now $11.35 million to account for the funding provided in the Chapter 189 from the 2016 supplemental budget. There are three recommendations related to the capital assistance program for three counties to create integrated solid waste management systems on lines 139, 140, and 141. The total for the Pollution Control Agency then is $57 million. Recommendations for Public Facilities Authority begin on line 144. There is $25 million, which would leverage an additional $85 million in federal money for state matching funds for federal grants. $80 million is recommended for the Wastewater Infrastructure Fund to offset the cost of high-cost clean water infrastructure programs. $62 million is recommended for the Wastewater Infrastructure Initiative Point Source Implementation Grants. On line 147, there is a recommendation, which is new from 2016, of $726,000 for the City of Denison to create a new lift station and to complete sewer projects. Line 148, there is a recommendation from the General Fund of $140,000 for the City of Lilydale to create a stormwater conveyance system down the Mississippi River Bluff. And finally, on line 149, $11.5 million in appropriation bonds is recommended for Lewis and Clark's phase three of the regional water system, which would extend the system to Worthington. In total, for the Public Facilities Authority, there is $179.366 million recommended. Department of Public Safety on line 154. There is $33.3 million recommended for a new state emergency operations center, which would be located adjacent to the National Guard's Hardin Hills Training Center. Line 155, $3.5 million is recommended for an oil train derailment joint emergency response center at Camp Ripley that would serve as a training center for state and local responders. And $2.5 million would be recommended for a grant to the City of Minneapolis for an emergency operations training facility that would support multiple agencies. In total, the recommendation for the public safety area is on line 157 is $39.323 million. There are three recommendations that the governor has for the state academies that begin on line 158. $2 million for asset preservation, $50,000 to design a security corridor to create a single entrance for three academic buildings, and $600,000 for the project that would create a new walking track at the State Academies, and that final recommendation on line 160 is an increase compared to 2016. In total, the governor recommends $2.65 million for the State Academies. So the Department of Transportation, beginning on line 162, the first governor's recommendation is for rail grade separation on crude oil rail lines. There is a recommendation of $69.6 million that would support projects in three communities. Commissioner Franz discussed that. In Moorhead, there would also be funding for rail crossings in Red Wing and Anoka County as well. Line 166, the governor recommends $10 million for quiet zones, which would implement federally regulated safety improvements. A recommendation of $5 million on line 167 for highway railroad grade crossing devices to replace outdated and obsolete devices. A new recommendation on line 168, $2.5 million, is the governor's recommendation for the Stone Arch Bridge repairs. The governor recommends $40 million in trunk highway bonds to create a facilities capital program at MnDOT, which would build and maintain department buildings. $10 million is the governor's recommendation for the Port Development Assistance Program. $1 million is the governor's recommendation for the passenger rail program, which would provide matching state funds. And Commissioner Franz discussed a couple of these next new recommendations on lines 172 and 173. $70 million each is recommended for local bridge replacement and local road improvement fund grants. The governor's recommendation of $20.5 million for Ramsey County is new to support a new interchange at Highway 694 and Rice Street. And $25 million is recommended for a grant to Hennepin County to redesign and create a new interchange at 35W and Lake Street. There is a change in the governor's recommendation related to the Duluth Airport. That number is now $6.619 million. That would support runway reconstruction and realignment. $3 million is the governor's recommendation related to the International Falls Airport. $2.33 million is recommended from the State Airports Fund for the City of Rochester's Airport Customs Project, which implements federally mandated improvements. And the governor has a new recommendation related to the airport in St. Cloud. The governor recommends $250,000 to do a return on investment study at the St. Cloud Airport to maximize a potential of economic development. There are two recommendations for the City of Grand Rapids. The first, on line 180, $750,000 would support a new pedestrian bridge over the Mississippi River, and $1 million would come from the rail service improvement account in the Special Revenue Fund for a new freight rail line to support design and engineering of that new line. $1 million is the governor's recommendation for Union Pacific BNSF grade separation. This recommendation would specifically support environmental analysis and design. And finally, from the general fund, there is a $4.9 million recommendation, which is a new recommendation from 2016, to offset costs related to utility relocation along Highway 53. In total, for the Department of Transportation, the governor recommends $343.5 million. Recommendations for the University of Minnesota begin on line 190. $55 million is recommended for higher education asset preservation and replacement. The governor's recommendation on line 191 is an increase over his 2016 recommendation. There is now $28.267 million recommended for the Chemistry and Advanced Materials Science Building on the Duluth campus. $66.667 million is recommended by the governor for design and construction of a new health sciences education facility to support the medical school and the academic health center. And $4.4 million is the governor's recommendation for a new plant growth research facility on the St. Paul campus. In total, the governor's recommendations for the University of Minnesota are just over $154.3 million. On line 194, Department of Veterans Affairs, the governor recommends $5 million for asset preservation, along with $7.851 million for repair of the trust bridge that is located on Minnehaha Avenue that the commissioner described in his remarks earlier. In total, the recommendation by the governor for Department of Veterans Affairs is $12.851 million. On line 198, there are two recommendations for the Water and Soil Resources Board. $30 million is recommended for the Reinvest in Minnesota Reserve Program to compensate landowners for granting conservation easements. And $10 million, which is an increase compared to the governor's 2016 recommendation for the Local Government Roads Wetland Replacement Program to replace the wetlands that might be lost to road construction projects. In total, the governor's recommendation for Bowser is $40 million. And I believe Commissioner Franz walked through the numbers on the last page. That total to $1.5 million in general obligation bonds and just over $1.8 million from all sources.
Well, thank you, Ms. Connor. members, any questions?
Thank you, Mr.
President Brunbeck.
Thank you. Commissioner, just can somebody give us a nice, clean definition of what the asset preservation category is all about? I mean, because, you know, some of these things you could say, you know, taking an existing building and just doing things that need to be done, I mean, is a little bit maybe asset preservation, but how do you categorize it?
Commissioner
Blanchard. It's a good question. I mean, obviously you have that tension between maintenance, just regular maintenance of a building, and asset preservation and all that. And Ms. Conner, talk a little bit more about how you calculate the asset preservation numbers.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the uses of asset preservation funding is outlined in statute. Generally, agencies are instructed to use asset preservation funding for things like tuck pointing a building or roof repairs or to remove life safety hazards. So primarily, they should defer to the guidance provided in statute about the types of projects that can be completed, and MMB is always happy to work with agencies if they're wondering if a project fits into those categories.
And, Mr. Chair, then just follow up about those uses, those utilizations then. I mean, are those tracked? Does anybody do a follow-up to see if asset preservation is really going to asset preservation?
Ms. Connor?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe some agencies are required by statute to complete reports about their uses of asset preservation funding. I would probably need to go back to our debt management division to find out what specific tracking they might do in addition to that.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Frank.
Representative, I just might add, one of the things that we're doing is tracking all of the buildings that the state owns. The University of Minnesota has a very sophisticated tracking system. Minnesota State Colleges and University does. And we are also adopting that same mechanism so that we can track the age and condition of different buildings, because the goal is not unlike highways and bridges. It's to try to categorize the assets that we have in a way that shows us what condition they're in, and when they start falling in the categories of needing repair or in poor condition or deteriorating. So the goal is to make sure that there is an inventory so that, much like roads and bridges, we go to those spots where it needs it the most, and also where those areas where we really need to make sure those particular facilities are working. But I think certainly one of the things we can do as we work more on this system is, anyone who wants, we'd be glad to share both what the college systems use and what we use to try to monitor that. You know, one of the things that is interesting when we, as a legislature and an administration, come together and authorize construction of a new building, we often don't put with that deferred maintenance that goes with that building. And obviously, every building over time costs money, whether it's a roof or a tuck pointing or anything else. So I think one of the things that we need to think more about in the future is, you know, as we build new projects or new important buildings that we need, how do we take care of those that we have, and how do we make that balance so that we really make sure that we're putting away the kind of money and resources that can take care of the buildings that we have? But it's a good question, Representative. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, when you have your forecast, when you do your forecast, you've always done that suggesting that you're going to have a big bill one year and a smaller bill the next year. So when you solicited from the departments and agencies for this bill, did you suggest to them that you were soliciting a two-year need, their two-year projection?
Mr. France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, let me back up a little bit. So one of, as you know, and most of the members know, we on odd or even number of years projected $800 million, but we forecast $800 million bonding bill and the debt that would go to support that and a $220 million bonding bill on odd numbered years. Since we didn't have one, a bonding bill in 2016, which we would have projected to be at least $800 million, we've worked with fiscal staff in the Senate and the House, and we've projected an $800 million bonding bill this year, and then another $800 million bonding bill next year in a regular bonding bill year. So we did try to make up for, in our forecast, what didn't happen last year. And so what will happen is, to the extent there's a bonding bill that's less than $800 million this year, then we'll have lower cost in terms of debt capacity. If we go more than $800 million, which, of course, we strongly recommend, the governor's budgeted for a $1.5 billion bonding bill. But what happened in 2015, now we have to go back to 2015, so as you know, and many of you have been to many of these projects, so in 2015 is when we solicited for the bonding bill of what we thought would be in 2016. So many of us went out, we inspected, we went to all these different projects around the state, and that became the basis for the governor's bonding bill in 2016, and obviously the Senate and the House did the same thing and investigated and inspected many projects. So these projects are really have been simmering for almost 2 years now in terms of the queue. So we did not go back, though, to answer your question finally. We did not go back and re-ask agencies, other than pricing, are there changes in what you originally submitted? We didn't go back and ask them to kind of resubmit new projects if they already had some on the list. So this is a little bit of a backlog, if you will, that we're dealing with here, and we haven't gone out to seek additional recommendations from agencies.
So from just to clarify then, because I'm just thinking particularly of higher education, your list has changed, though, and has included some that haven't been part of the conversation in the past. So I'm a little confused because it sounds like maybe some were solicited for new projects and others not.
Mr. France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not sure that the University of Minnesota changed at all. And there may have been a couple changes in the Minnesota state system, but that was really at their request. But most of I think the University of Minnesota did not change. Am I correct on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, Mr. Chair, if I could, on page 2 of 7, Representative Filowski had put together this disaster relief program, and so I'm wondering about lines 41, 42, 43. Were they not eligible for the criteria that we normally had laid out?
Commissioner France.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know exactly. I don't believe that they did, but in order, if we had Representative Pulaski here, he could give us the details, but they don't think they reached the level of the governor's declaration, so I don't think they were covered by the infrastructure or the emergency bill. So that's why these were separate appropriations outside of that normal process.
And the reason I ask that, Mr. Chair, I would assume we always want to be fair to everyone across the state, and that's why he set out criteria that we would always measure against so that we were treating all cities the same. What is an emergency? What is a disaster? So I was just curious about that. And then, Mr. Chair, if I could, one more on that page, line 60. I was under the impression that 2014-2015 would just require kind of back-of-the-bill language. If it appears on a spreadsheet the way we normally do things, it actually gets accumulated into the total. So seeing it here with an amount, does that throw off the total?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the authorization is tracked just for the sake of transparency. However, it is not included in the appropriation bond authorizations that require debt service.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Beckman?
Ms. Chen, Ms. Connors, or Commissioner Franz. When the governor made his announcement in early January of his bonding bill, he specifically referenced $3.4 million for Forest Road Bridge improvements, and I don't see that anywhere in the spreadsheet, so I was wondering if you'd comment on that.
Commissioner Franz.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't see. Can you have any more information about that? The $3.4 million you said for Forest?
That's correct. Forest Road Bridge improvement. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have some detail here, but not all of it. We'll have to look that up and get back to you on that. I'm sorry.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I have three questions, but they should go pretty quickly, I think.
We'll time them.
No time limit. Okay. Well, then I could have more than three. Oh, they will time me. Oh, excuse me. I didn't. My first one, because of the USWIC funds, and there was a time many years ago that with our colleges and universities, when a new facility was needed, they were paid for by the state of Minnesota. A number of years ago, then we meaning the legislature, not exactly with my support, we changed that to partially funded with user fees. But I've always asked the question, what's the tuition impact? And there's two parts to that question. There's the buildings that are still being paid for that are being covered by the colleges and universities, and then there's the new projects that would be subject to user fees as they go on online or those bonds are being retired. So if you don't have that information now, I'd like to have the answer to both those questions, what the tuition impact is going to be. And the reason I raise that question, Mr. Chairman, is that in recent years, we all know that the cost of attendance and tuition has really skyrocketed at all of our state colleges and universities. And so I think we should be sensitive to that and at least know what those numbers are. So I don't suspect you have them with you, but maybe you do.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, when you see me writing, that's a pretty good indication I don't have it, and I'm writing down the question.
Okay.
So we'll get that information for you.
And then the other question I had, Mr. Chairman, because I've been involved with the airport fund for a variety of reasons, and what will be the balance if this bill were passed into law with the airport fund? I think you're using like $9.5 million or something currently, and the airport fund traditionally has been higher than the $9.5
Mr. Chair, Representative,
Mr. Franz.
You're right, we are using
$9.2 million
in this particular fund. Do we have the balance available? I don't think, we will have that, we'll get that.
Again, Mr. Chairman, if they could get that, at least within a certain community that has been a sensitive issue, what those funds are used for and what the balance is and what have you. The final question I have deals with DNR and the state parks, and I didn't see anything in there with the development of what I call the new state park next to Tower Sedan. I don't know if it's called Vermilion State Park now. We acquired that land a few years ago, and at the time we knew that it was going to take time after we acquired the land to develop that park. And I know some development has taken place, but I don't think it's complete yet. And so I'm wondering what the status of that is, if you know the park I'm referring to.
Vermilion, I believe they created that right after they did away with Greenleaf Lake State Park.
Well, I've got no problem with being me, especially with the current chair. But I was quite involved working with Representative Wagenius when I chaired the Finance Committee to acquire that land along Lake Vermilion that U.S. Steel was holding. And if I recall, it was something like five miles of lakeshore and just a whole lot of potential for developing a new park. But we knew at the time that we didn't have the resources to do much more than acquire the land, and then we would be developing it later in stages. And so I don't see anything here to continue that development. And I guess I'm asking why. I think it was on the request list for Vermilion, but if we could get an answer to that now or later as well.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Franz, if you have an answer, that's good. Otherwise, Representative Ugloom also has one, he said.
I'll yield to the representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, last year we did tour that in the bonding bus, and work is going on up there. It's a lot of it is complete. It's going to be a beautiful, beautiful state park. I think that they were actually shooting for some reservations this last fall. So it is being used. There's more work to be done, but it's nearly complete.
And Mr. Chairman, I know that it will be long, but I think you in part answered the question. It's nearly complete, but it's not complete, and that's why I'm... Or there were resources to complete. Well, I'd like to hear from DNR at some point then what the status of the park is, either formally or informally, in terms of being completed.
Mr. Franz, anything to add to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, I mean, there was. The governor actually was interested in that last year, as you may recall. It was on the request list, but it was taken off. But we'll look into what is left to do there and get that information to you.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that there is still more to be done. I don't know just how much, but
I think we'll have to get a report from DNR on that. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Franz, this isn't about a specific project, but I'm correct in asking that. You said in a normal bonding year, you guys project your calculations on approximately $800 million, and in an off-bonding year, $220 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Frank. Another question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Frankie.
So this is for $1.5 million, this proposed bonding. Is this taking into account then going forward to next year's complete bonding year? Or if we pass this today, would we not have to hear from the governor next year?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you might not hear from the governor, but you're going to hear from the citizens of Minnesota about needed projects and things around the state. This is not really a governor's bill. This is, and I'm just speaking what the governor says. This is a governor's bill about what he believes is needed around the state. So, but to answer your question, we did forecast an $800 million bonding bill this year and an $800 million bonding bill next year, because what happens over time, and I've got the list in front of me, we tried to figure out, you know, we want to try to have a systematic way of dealing with our debt and approaching our debt and how much it's going to increase. So that's why we came up with the 800-220 split, you know, in the different years. And that still holds pretty true. Obviously, it's going to change a little bit based on what we do this year and didn't do last year. So to say that if you did it all, you wouldn't hear from the governor next year, I don't think you'll ever not hear from Governor Dayton in a year about the need to do bonding and the need to take care of what we have, the need to do new economic development. So I can't promise you that, sir.
Mr. Chair. I didn't make it with Commissioner Franz, but this does take into account then next year's full bonding year, in essence.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no.
No.
No. The governor is recommending $1.5 billion in bonding bill this year, and he will recommend another bonding bill next year.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, on transportation on lines 172 and 173, you have local bridge replacement program and also local road improvement fund grants totaling between the two, $140 million. Now, that means there's a list of those projects that are, there's a list of those projects? Is that what we're, because you also have a list of other projects that are under transportation.
Commissioner Franz?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. I mean, there is a list that's maintained, and it's a very, frankly, a very popular and a very strong program for local communities that don't have maybe major highways going through them. And so this has been used for a number of years, and they do go by a list and figure out how projects are rated under that list. But that's managed by the Department of Transportation.
So, Mr. Chair, just quick follow-up. So, what I just heard then is that the MnDOT has that list then. Am I correct? Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes.
Commissioner?
I already answered, Mr. Chair.
Well, I wanted to hear it again.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Very good answer. Okay, any other questions, members? I've got a couple here. On line 125 in the spreadsheet, it references and development Pheasant Summit, looking at the language in the bill, beginning on line 14.16, there's no reference in that section to a Pheasant Summit. Does it need to be mentioned in here if they're going to have funding for it? Ms. Conner?
My understanding is that the recommendations that are alluded to in this statute came from the Pheasant Summit. I'm not familiar with what those recommendations are, but...
Okay. Thank you. That clears that up. At least I think it does. Another question in the sex offender program under Department of Human Services, it references less restrictive alternatives. Where would they be? What is the location being planned for less restrictive alternatives? Do you know that?
Ms.
Conner?
My understanding is that those less restrictive alternative programs are located at the St. Peter Regional Treatment Center, and they are less restrictive as compared to the programs at Moose Lake.
So it is the St. Peter?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just noting that there are a number of new facilities being built. So I have a couple questions. But one is, do the operating costs, I mean, when we put these numbers together and include them, is there knowledge about the operating costs and how those will be covered? Or is the facility able to cover all of that themselves? Do we know that?
Ms. Conner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, when agencies and local governments submit requests into the capital budget system at the outset of a bonding year, one of the questions that we ask them to answer is there funding sufficient to support the programming costs that go along with the capital projects? So that is a criteria that we do look at, and it's a question that we ask requesters to answer. There should not be funding within these project recommendations to support programming costs.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I see there's funding for security in the Capitol complex, and Commissioner, could you enlighten us to perhaps what they're talking about? And I've had two meetings as an individual legislator of late dealing with the security of the state office building. And I'm wondering if anything in that number would include this building, and if so, what?
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner Vance.
Well, one of the things that has been going on with the Capitol complex and concerns about security and upgrades to security has been dealt with by the committee that meets on that. And I'm blanking on the name of that committee, the Capitol Security Advisory Committee. And so they work on trying to come up with some plans. So what we've tried to do here is, and why there's some bonding involved here, because many times it's equipment. But in this particular case, there are some design and construction stuff to increase physical security in and around the Capitol complex. As you can imagine, with all the buildings that are connected to the tunnel that are around this system, the security complex is kind of a difficult thing to monitor. And so I think this was the first step in trying to put some better planning around the Capitol complex, not just the Capitol itself, but the other buildings that are attached to it through the tunnel system. So I don't have many more details than that, but I just know that this was the outcome of the committee looking at ways to improve overall security on the campus.
Mr. Chairman, maybe just for your information, the two meetings that I had, the point that was made by Highway Patrol and our Capitol Security people, they're all under the same jurisdiction or administration, was that this is probably the least secure building in the entire Capitol complex or mall, this building here. And that's why I raised the question as to whether any of that money or that planning process included this building or not.
Mr. Chair, it does include the entire complex. That was, even by the nature of both the tunnel system and just in general, they were trying to look at trying to maintain consistent services and security around the entire system. So they looked at the entire campus.
Yeah, so, Mr. Chair, maybe at some point we can find out what within that number then, what the plans are for this particular building, being that at least some of our professionals, at least informally, have identified it as one of the most difficult to secure. It deals with the number of entrances and the very open common areas throughout the building that we're all very familiar with. So maybe we can find out more as the session moves on. Thank you.
Okay. Other questions from members? Hold on, Hadari.
I'll change my mind.
We were debating whether you were waving or raising your hand anyway. So.
I was, but Representative Frank, I'll just want to call. I'll talk to him after.
All right. Thank you, Representative Constantine. Any member of the public who wishes to make a comment regarding the governor's bonding proposal?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Franz. Thank you, Ms. Connor. Yep. Stick around in case we need you. No, sit there.
Thank you.
Please. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
My name is Bruce McKenzie, a lifelong resident of Frogtown. My comments basically have to do with great concerns that have arisen in my mind about the Minnesota Historical Society. I have some history with the MHS. Actually, I have history with activism in support of Native American people. When I was still a young man, more than half a lifetime ago, I volunteered to support the Lakota people in the West during the time of the Black Hills Survival Gathering. And I've also been involved with environmental issues, both as an activist and volunteer for many years. Today, I need to focus on MHS and my concerns about how they've gone so gravely off course. I've been a member. I've spent countless hours there researching. More recently, I've been a volunteer using both my back and my research skills with the National Park Service. And what I've seen happen to MHS has been an activist group with an agenda which is different from historical attempt to tell an honest history, has basically the tail has begun wagging the dog, which MHS has been pushed around and has capitulated both morally and intellectually. And here good examples have to do with this attempt to redo the Fort Snelling History Center. One of the proposals is to have a Dakota Interpretive Center. Well, those of us who paid any attention to the history of Fort Snelling know that it was put there in the first place because Dakota and the Ojibwa people actually welcomed the effort to stop the terrible bloodshed between the tribes. And because I have long embraced diversity, and in fact, I went to the 1983 commemoration of the March on Washington in Washington, D.C. Since I embrace diversity, I also embrace tribal diversity. And I believe strongly that the telling of the history of Fort Snelling and the confluence need to embrace tribal diversity. It's not about one tribe. And in fact, it's definitely not about one small dissident group of the Dakota putting forth stories that insult the Shakopee Dakota, the federally recognized tribe, and dishonor some traditional Dakota in spinning and slanting the story. So I would say zero out the money that MHS wants to spend for a Dakota interpretive center, because they're not capable of honestly spending it, and substitute instead a tribal diversity interpretive center, wherein the Ojibwa, who some people have been attempting to ethnically cleanse from the story of Fort Snelling, and the Iowa people, who were in fact ethnically cleansed from the confluence of the river, the area of the fort, where their stories will be told. And I do this because diversity means something to me, and I'm very concerned about the slanted, less than honest stories that have been coming out of MHS. A great deal of political wisdom I gained many years ago when I read George Orwell's 1984 about the story of Winston Smith working at the Ministry of Truth. Well, I felt that in recent years, MHS's treatment, leaning, slanting heavily and off course and telling an honest history, has been like the job of Winston Smith working at the Ministry of Truth, whose purpose was to rewrite history.
Thank you, Mr. McKenzie. I think you made your point.
Thank you very much.
And
thank you for your good work in Minnesota history.
Thank you. I will say that I don't believe that, and if there's someone from the Historical Society who wants to correct me, the governor's bonding proposal has nothing to do with a Dakota interpretive center. As I understand it, what we have here is a current visitor center that is in disrepair and needs to be replaced, and the current barracks will be repaired, reconstructed, so that that can be used as an interpretive center. Certainly, Dakota history will be involved, but also the history of early Minnesota and early Fort Snelling will be involved. It's not a just a Dakota interpretive center. Mr. Kelleher, am I correct? You start by agreeing with me.
Mr. Chair, David Kelleher from the Minnesota Historical Society. You're correct. We're going to tell a wide variety of stories at the historic Fort Snelling project. And I guess I would take exception to the testimony that our staff is dishonest and not telling a full story. I think it's premature to say exactly what is going to go into that site as far as programming. We're working with a wide variety of groups, American Indian groups and African-American groups and Asian-American groups, to put together what that story is going to look like and even what the facilities are going to look like. We haven't started design yet, so to say what that's going to look like and what the content is going to be is inaccurate and premature. So I'm stepping up here to make sure that you all know that we are open to all stories in the 8,000 or 10,000 years of the history of that site, and we appreciate the governor's support and the committee's support as well. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else from the audience? Welcome. Identify yourself, please.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Ron Harnick, and I'm representing the Red River Watershed Management Board, as well as some other projects statewide with respect to the flood hazard mitigation program that is funded through the Department of Natural Resources. I think, as many of you know, the flood damage reduction program has been a very significant partner between state and local governments to address significant flood hazards in the state and to reduce our reliance on fight the flood. The expenditures that we make to prevent flooding saves us about $4 to $7 in flood fighting and recovery that happens frequently. And the governor's proposal here has a little over $6 million in it for two specific projects that are a very significant priority for flood damage reduction: the city of Halstead in the Red River Valley and the city of Montevideo. on the Minnesota River. Montevideo will leverage federal funds, and it will complete that project, and Halstead, it will complete that project as well. However, we feel the funding falls short of what was in the bill last year that had almost passed. It was about $11.55 million in last year, and that would have probably completed several other projects that are on the priority list for DNR. Browns Valley, Rushford are two projects that would have been completed. It would have also provided some funding for a few other projects that are in critical need to keep the projects moving forward. The City of Afton, Red Path Project in Red River Valley, City of Neillsville, which will also leverage an additional $350,000 of DOT funds, and that project might be delayed if those if funding through the bonding bill is not available. Also, Cedar River Watershed District, City of Austin, is another project that is ongoing that has some critical needs. One other aspect of concern that we have is there have been monies, partnered monies, appropriated through the Clean Water Fund and through the SARD SAMs that would leverage with the bonding dollars. And because we did not have a bonding bill last year, there are a couple projects that are probably at risk of potentially losing the SARD SAMs money, or we will have to look at trying to get reauthorization for those moving forward. Mr. Chairman and members, we think that a better number is somewhere between 12 and 15 million to really help address the priority issues related to flood damage reduction, flood hazard mitigation. So I thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and if there are any questions, I'll try to do my best to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harnack. Are there any questions from the members? Thank you, Mr. Harnack. Is there any other testimony? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
My name is Dave Fidelli from Apple Valley. I've been a historian for 31 years. It wasn't my main living, but I had a good civics teacher in ninth grade, so that's why I'm here. My expertise is Camp Coldwater in the Fort Snelling area. I discovered the village of Camp Coldwater. It's also the second military camp when the troops came up here to build Fort Snelling. I also discovered the Lost Villages, Travis de Sioux, and did some lectures on that. When it came time for the land to be bought, I put all that in place and got people to do what needed to be done to get the Travis de Sioux Interpreter Center built. Bloomington, I worked with the Gideon Pond people out there, Bloomington Historical Society. So I'm pretty accurate. I'm 100% accurate in what I'm going to say. I've been attending a couple of meetings here in the last few months on the Historical Society. And it goes back a ways back, back to 1998 to 2001, where the state threw about $350,000 down the hole on this Camp Coldwater, which was not a sacred site. That's the site I discovered, and it was made up by Highway 55 protesters.
Sir, please stay focused on the bond.
This is part of it. So the activists have resurfaced on that particular subject, and they get grants from MHS. So MHS has gone in the direction of what these activists want Fort Snelling to be portrayed. And Chairman Erdahl is a great historian on the Dakota history as well as I am. So I'm very positive that, you know, between the two of us and others, you know, we can come up with some solution to remove this activism, false information that Bedote is a Dakota origin. That's nonsense. But that's the kind of stuff that's going on to make a land grab. So things can be changed, carrot and stick somehow, but some of these ideas are for Fort Snelling to be rebuilt and what they want, the Calvary Barracks and everything to be. Those are my ideas back in the 80s and 90s that I put forth. So I do want Fort Snelling to be rebuilt. I want it to be rebuilt in the spirit of Russell Fridley, the former director of the Historical Society, that really pushed to get Fort Snelling rebuilt in the first place. So I'm positive that, you know, working with the right people, like Chairman Erdahl here, and that we can get the false history weeded out, and we can get everything moving forward in the right direction. Right now, they're not moving in the correct direction on Native history, and it needs to be told, but it needs to be told accurately. So thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Dolan, step up, please. Welcome and identify yourself for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Curtis Darlene. I also am an independent historian. I focus primarily on the Dakota War of 1862, which I've worked on for 15 years now. In the last probably 7 or 8 years, a number of us independent historians have talked to the Minnesota Historical Society, including meetings with the CEO and director, Mr. Elliott. And the reason we meet with them is we see a bias. And as historians, we take our history seriously, and there should be no bias one direction or the other. It does not serve the public well. For example, the Minnesota Historical Society calls the Dakota Indian camp that was at Fort Snelling in the winter of 62-63 a concentration camp. Now, they do make a point of saying it was not like the Nazi camps that come to mind, but in my mind, it's splitting hairs, and it does not serve the public well, because most of the public does not have time to delve into whether it was, in fact, a concentration camp or what kind of camp that was. So in effect, I see it as biased, and so I have a problem with $34 million being spent for the new facility, because my fear is that the exhibits that would be developed there would also be biased. And they'll probably be up for many, many years, and that's a problem. So, anyway, I do thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Deline, and thank you for the work you've done. And I would encourage the Historical Society to take into consideration the comments made this afternoon and act appropriately. Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Representative Gunther, did I see your hand up earlier? Or? Okay. Anything else? We will be meeting again tomorrow. But for now, this case is closed.